What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Monday, July 31st, 2017. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside Andrew Renee, the busiest lady in the business. How are you?
I'm doing pretty excellent, actually.
You said all you did this weekend was sit on the couch and play games.
It was my first weekend home all summer.
I feel so good.
I felt half compelled to go out and like do something because the weather was so beautiful this weekend down on the peninsula. But I really just didn't want to get dressed. I didn't want to put makeup on. I didn't want to go outside. I sent John to go get food and bring it back.
Go scavenge for me.
Yeah, I just played video games all weekend. What'd you play? Lovely. Fortnite for the most part.
Okay, so you're on the Fortnite train. I know you did the stream on Thursday.
Yeah, so we had the devs in for What's Good Games. The stream was excellent. He actually showed us some really helpful tips.
Yeah.
But
I popped in. I demanded Nick Chester, and all I got was a thumbs up. And I'm like, come on,
he
Nick.
He very much was like, I'm not going on camera, so I apologize.
You're a coward, Chester, and everybody knows it. Thank you, Kevin.
So we're really looking forward to, John and I have been playing and been building together. It really scratches that tower defense itch that I haven't had from a game in a long time.
Run me through it, because that's the thing. We saw it at Judges Week. Now it's out in the wild. What is it? We don't talk about any of our shows because none of us are really drawn to it. What is drawing you to it, and like, what's the elevator pitch for it?
So the base building and the tower defense aspect is really the kind of addicting gameplay part for me. Yeah. And the combat is fun, but the thing that takes a little bit of time to really understand is the incredibly complicated menu system and the skill tree system. So there's a lot going on with this game, and I think that eventually when you're mid to late game, it'll all make sense and it'll all like really flow together nicely. But early game, the communication for how these systems work together is a little bit overwhelming. So the basic gameplay is you are a hero. There's four classes of heroes. There's constructor, ninja, assassin, and soldier. And each of your heroes has different attributes and different special abilities. And you play four-player co-op. So you can either choose to go in with a team of people you know, or they'll publicly matchmake you with people. And there's a set of missions that you choose from on a map. You have a home base that you can build. It's a persistent base, which is great. So people that get really creative with base building can make some really fantastic structures with the different kinds of ways you can build up your base. And then when you want to have like a quick mission, you can just pop in to these random missions that are all over the map. So once you have your base, you have to expand your storm shield. So the overall kind of lore of the game is that there's this crazy big storm that has covered the planet, and it's bringing these husk monsters, and you have to push back the storm with your storm shield to save survivors that are getting attacked by these husks. Cool. And so as you progress with the game, your storm shield expands more and more, and you uncover more and more of the map, and you go out into these suburban areas or industrial zones or wooded or like woodland areas, and you find survivors and you bring them back to your base and you save them, essentially.
Cool. And that was your weekend.
Yeah.
Surviving, saving survivors.
Just spending the whole weekend in menus.
Yeah. No, I had the same thing where Saturday night, I turned to Jen. I'm like, you know, today was great. And she's like, oh, when we went, because we went to like Stinson Beach and stuff. She's like, oh, when we were down there. I'm like, no. When we were sitting on the couch and I was playing Patapon and you were watching Game of Thrones, and it was just a chill weekend of like, hey, this is our life. There's nothing to run to. There's no event. There's nothing. Tomorrow, I'm not going somewhere. She's not going home to kind of, like, it was like, perfect. I'm just doing that. And then it all turned into a nightmare last night. I'm one trophy away from the platinum in Patapon. It's a mini game I hate. I finally feel like I have the rhythm thanks to a stream we did today where for an hour I played. I have to do it perfect five times. I was only able to do it perfect twice for an hour. But I think I got the rhythm now. I think if I get a break in the day today, I'm going to be able to get in there and knock this thing out. But
no, I'm going to try it. I saw you playing it all weekend. Yeah. So,
it's great. The game's great. It's interesting. Somebody screenshotted tweets to me that are translated from like IGN Italy and some other source that are like giving it shitty reviews, saying the timing's all off and the buttons aren't, you know, like you can't get on. There's lag.
Like the Parappa the Rapper remaster?
Exactly. That is not my experience at all. Like, I up until this one mini game that I don't understand, like, it doesn't have a fucking song. I don't hear a beat in it that I hate. It's a long story.
Just tell them to get good.
Well, that's what everyone in the chat was telling me. And they were all really mean, I think. And then they saw how much it hurt me that I couldn't do this. And then they all got supportive. And then when we finally got one, everybody celebrated. If you didn't know, ladies and gentlemen, this is Kinda Funny Games Daily each and every weekday here on a whole bunch of different platforms. We run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. We get all dirty with it. We get in there. We talk about the stories. Give it all to you in a boiled down function. If you like that, you can watch us record it live at twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We don't interact with you, however. You have to go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. Tell us what we screw up and get wrong during the show. If you don't want to do any of that, you want to listen later, great. You can get us on podcast services all over the place or watch on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Please, wherever you consume the product, go to the other places and rate and share it there. We are dangerously close to 1,000 reviews on iTunes. Less than, I think, 75 now to go. So if you could head over there and do it, that would mean a lot to me. Please, it would be cool. Also, remember, Kinda Funny Live 3 is now available for everyone for free over on youtube.com/kindoffunny. Another thing I got to do today is Tim went through and made all these awesome GIFs for every person who was on the show. So I need to send you your GIF and a link to when you come out on the show so you can get in there.
Yeah.
But for now, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. It's just, you sound so, it's such a low key doo-doo-doo.
I'm so tired.
There are 6 items on the Roper Report.
A baker's dozen!
As long as you deliver that, Kev, I don't mind. A couple of these are updates to news stories we've talked about before.
Yeah.
We're going to start with more PlayerUnknown's Battleground stuff. They've broken another record. They tweeted out today, PlayerUnknown tweeted out. We now hold the record for the highest peak player count of any non-Valve game. And he's saying, I'm talking about on Steam. So he's saying, good job, everybody. It's crazy to look at this. We talked about this before when PlayerUnknown got above Grand Theft Auto 5 for concurrence on Steam. And we were like, holy, that's awesome. Wow, how could it go? To give you the idea there, Grand Theft Auto 5 was at 360,000. Well, I'm going to round up every one of these. 361,000. Then it was PlayerUnknown with what their number was. I forget now. Then it was Fallout with 472. And now PlayerUnknown just reset it in July with 481,000 players. More than 481,000 people playing it at one time. Holy shit, Andrea. When does this game stop? Because now we did a Let's Play that'll be up as a party mode eventually. And it was one of those, like, I liked it. It was exactly what I thought it was. I've played King of the Kill or whatever with H1Z1. I think this is awesome. I got Patapon trophies to get, though. But it got right. Tim, where Tim went home and just kept playing that night. Where does this top out? Do you think can this touch Counter-Strike Global Offensive, which its peak concurrent was 850,000?
We're talking like they would have to double our numbers,
yeah.
right? To get to Counter-Strike's
yeah.
level. So I think that they'll definitely continue to increase. I don't know if they're going to increase that much
yeah.
unless they add some substantial content to the game, which obviously they're doing. So where we could see these numbers actually rise is not just on the Steam concurrence, but with Xbox One players brought into the mix. So this yeah. is going to be the interesting thing. Once this comes to Xbox One, to see just how much more how much bigger the player base is going to get when you bring in console.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's plans in the future for this ultimately to come to PS4, because if you bring that in, and then if you allow crossplay between Xbox and PC and then PC and PS4,
yeah.
then potentially it could be it could explode. But yeah. because it's a shooter, generally we don't see shooters allowing crossplay
sure.
for a very obvious reason.
Controller's too good.
Yeah, that's it, Greg. The controller is just too good.
It's too precise, you know what I mean?
I think it's great. I think it's great that they're doing so excellently, and they're definitely going to increase their numbers because the word of mouth is just spreading.
It's insane, the word of mouth in this game, to the point of I can see the numbers continue to go up just in the fact that no one leaves. It seems mm-hmm. like once you finally give in and play, you're in like everybody else. You're a Gary Whitta where you're just doing this all the time. You're Austin Walker and Patrick Klepek playing every morning. Like,
yeah.
It's a game that it is a gateway drug to its own drug. Once you get that hit, you're in. It seems like nonstop. Of like, if somebody wanted to play, if somebody was reaching out, I would totally play more. You know what I mean? Like, if I didn't have trophies and Tacoma to play now,
I think I would play more once it's on console. Mm. My PC is now in the studio where sure. we shoot the show, and
yeah.
so if I want to play on my PC, I have to like leave the house and go out to the studio, and then I'm like isolated in that room.
I hear you. No cats.
So like,
no
I don't
job.
Really. Usually play on PC very often.
Exactly.
So once this comes to Xbox One, though,
do you think it's going to set the world on fire on Xbox One as well?
I mean, set the world on fire is maybe a little hyperbolic, yeah, but I think it's going to do excellently. I think it's going to do big numbers.
What's interesting to think about with it is, like, this is now, I think, the next Xbox One exclusive that I can think of off the top of my head that I'm 100% in.
This is a great get for Xbox. They certainly needed a third-party title to, like, reinvigorate their console fans, because they've been kind of quiet. I mean, obviously, you and I are both going to play Tacoma. That's another Xbox One exclusive.
I can't think of another Xbox One exclusive, except the one I just mentioned 4 seconds
right,
ago.
Exactly. And I think that they really needed this, and it'll be interesting to watch how it progresses.
Yeah, I'm going to be fascinated to see what happens when it gets to consoles. It'll be interesting to see how long it takes to get to PlayStation 4, because it was that Xbox One console launch exclusive stuff they're talking about, made it sound like that. I remember there being a headline in a story about somebody on the team being like, no, eventually, I don't know, but everything eventually ends up on PlayStation 4, doesn't it, Kev? Mario Brothers 2019. Yes. Andrew Little wrote in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD, just like you can, and says, continuing a question from last week about the ban for stream sniping, PlayerUnknown released the following tweet on the subject, explaining how they reached their decision to ban the player. To bring you back up to speed, if you missed this, last week we did a quick aside. It wasn't a news story because it was developing as we were going live on Friday, I do believe, about this player. It was getting passed around from Reddit and just starting to get reported on other sites that this player had been banned, and the original Reddit thread was like, my friend just got banned for stream sniping, but he wasn't. It was funny that he was in that match with that guy, and meanwhile the PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds people had banned him, and everybody's like, well, no, he probably was sniping, but how do you prove that? And it's a slippery slope. The official statement reads this: I've seen the data and the community team looked at before issuing the ban, and the ban was indeed justified. The tracking data shows the player in question tried to join the same lobby as their target multiple times. While we understand we cannot prove this player was watching the target's broadcast, we see no other reason why they would consistently attempt to be in the same lobby as someone who is broadcasting live other than to have an advantage in the game. We have tracking in place that allows us to verify unfair play like this, despite what some players may think. For example, we can track when a player joins and quickly disconnects from multiple lobbies, only staying in a game when they are in the same lobby as their target. We're consistently developing new tracking systems and ways to ensure fair play from all players. We don't generally mention this publicly as it would give valuable information to those that try to cheat the system. I think you missed a two there. No one gets special treatment, and if the data doesn't back up a claim, no ban is handed out. The community team is committed to ensuring everyone, no matter who they are, has a level playing field when in a game. So a little bit of light on that. I like that. It was confusing on the day of how do you figure it out, blah, blah. And I like that they're looking out, and I like that they're talking about it. This is another thing with PlayerUnknown, of course, obviously, that there is a PlayerUnknown, right, who made all this kind of happen, made the mod, then made the game or whatever. It's cool to see them, as the game gets bigger, still treating it like, all right, no, I'm going to talk. I'm going to be the pulpit. I'm going to give you the information.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing. And as they mentioned in their statement, they can't really be too transparent about their practices, because that would then open the door for other people who are looking to game the system or cheat to kind of get a leg up on and then they would have to, you know, constantly scramble to stay ahead of them. So I get why it's kind of secretive why they make these decisions and how they go about doing it. But I mean, it's a tough thing to track. The thing about this story that kind of makes me scratch my head a little is, who's got the time to stream snipe? I mean, who's doing these things? Like, I asked them, Andy and Joey, about this. I was like, I guess maybe I didn't fully understand the concept of what stream sniping was. And then when they explained it, I was like, wait, but why? Why is anybody wasting their time trying to do this?
To ruin people's good time.
To like disconnect from lobbies and reconnect from lobbies and have somebody stream open and go find. I'm like, I just don't get it.
Yeah, no, I think it's something that comes with popularity and the crowd you build on the internet, right? Yeah. Where it's like, nobody here when we fucking stream Friday the 13th, it cares enough to go stream snipe where Jason is or whatever. Like, granted, there's a lag or stuff, but you could totally cheat. But like, why would you? You're playing with your friends.
Right.
Whereas
exactly.
Like, for this guy who got banned, I assume it's, I'm going to be on whoever mega popular streamer guy's stream, and I'm going to look like a badass because I kill him.
The thing that was confusing to me, though, is how the logistics of trying to make sure that you're in the same lobby with the hundreds of thousands of concurrent players that are playing this game. Like, how do you even go about trying to make sure that you're in the same lobby as that person?
When we did it, we were doing like not private stuff, but you know, like private servers. I believe you can get down to region and stuff like that. So I would assume you know where he's playing. And so you're boiling down to try to get that same thing.
I mean, please find something better to do with your time than harass people like that. Just enjoy the game. Just have fun.
Yeah. Just don't harass people on the internet.
Also, maybe try to win legitimately.
Get good. Get good, as you know? Everybody says.
Stream sniping.
Number two on the Roper Report is a super simple one. That Metroid Samus's Return Hard Mode and Fusion Suit are indeed locked with that amiibo. Nintendo told Nintendo Everything. Yes, they are locked unless you buy the amiibo. We talked about it last week, so just a heads up. A little update for you. Nothing more to say, really. It's happening. That's how it is. Yeah. Pay it. If you want it, don't send a message. Number three, I have Pokemon pros and cons. Two stories from IGN. GameSpot. We'll start with IGN. Pokemon Go has the highest grossing day since launch. The limited time introduction of legendary Pokemon has seen Pokemon Go players spend the most money in a single day outside of the game's launch period. Sensor Tower's revenue data shows that around the globe, Pokemon Go players put down around $5.8 million on July 23rd, the day after the long-awaited legendary Pokemon Articuno and Lugia. I nailed that one too. Became available to catch. This took place as part of the Chicago Pokemon Go Festival, which experienced connectivity problems and saw developer Niantic offer apologies and refunds to attendees, as well as add delays to the planned European event. Despite these problems leading some players to sue Niantic, Pokemon Go currently is the top grossing app in 23 countries, which includes the US, Canada, and the UK, with more legendary releases to come in the form of Moltres. And Zapdos, but big old Zapdos. Zapdos.
Don't worry, I mispronounce them all the time.
Dos.
I'm not going to say...
Moltres.
No, it's...
Moltres and Zapdos.
Moltres and Zapdos. Zapdos, come on, DOS at the end. That's funny. It's a play on computers, you see, because it's a computer video game.
Three in Spanish.
It's a thing. Well, nobody knows Spanish.
That's DOS, not DOS.
Nailed you. Niantic will likely hold the spot.
I'm saying it's those.
If you're on the hunt for Moltres, as raids begin, we just had the guy to help you. That's IGN. So IGN Kevin. Mentions the delays in there. I want to jump those. This is the con of all this. GameSpot says, after Pokemon Go's Chicago Fan Fest ran into a bunch of problems earlier in July, developer Niantic has postponed a number of upcoming events in Europe. The Safari Zone celebrations in Copenhagen and Prague, previously scheduled for August 5th, and Stockholm and Amsterdam, August 12th, will now happen on a date later in the fall. Niantic was quick to stress that no other planned events, including those in Japan, France, Spain, and Germany, were affected by the delay. Quote, we apologize for any inconvenience and hope you understand that our priority is to ensure great experience for Pokemon Go trainers in Europe and around the world. However, it seems not all the news may be bad. The developer concluded by saying, quote, as a special surprise, we understand that some Pokemon that are rarely seen in Europe will be appearing soon in certain European cities. For a brief time, keep your eyes peeled. Andrew, look at us talking about Pokemon Go again. 3 weeks in a row it's been on this show.
I saw it on the list today and I was like, do we have to?
This is what I was talking about. Like, if the Pokemon Go event in Chicago would have gone off without a hitch, I think there'd be even, my whole thing was like, I thought more people would have been playing, more people would have come back, all these different things. People did. Highest grossing day since launch. That's fucking crazy. This game, a year old, that I think most of us have forgotten or deleted from our phones. Mm-hmm. Here it is. People are still addicted to it, are still out there. And even when the news is bad, they're like, hey, this thing didn't go well, and now they're getting
all
sued.
All press is good press.
Man.
I was talking to Brittany about this, because she's...
Britt Bromrocker?
Yes. She's,
What's Good Games?
Yes, also blondenerd.com. So
no,
she,
it's dead now. It's not.
So she is also a big Pokemon Go player, and she said that with the release of the new legendaries and the raid battles, she's been out playing. She'd put it down for a really long time, and she's picked it back up, and she's been, you know, out catching Pokemon and having fun with the game again, and it's kind of reinvigorated them, which is great. I think, you know, they clearly, you know, had some problems with FanFest, and I heard the news that you guys talked about with the class action suit, which I think is, you know, they're not going to get anything from that. But
you think they'll settle, or they think they'll let it go to court?
I don't think they'll settle. Yeah. I think that the people who are putting out the lawsuit it's their right to do so, but I don't think they're going to get anything. Because you guys mentioned there's tons of precedents for this, so.
Yeah.
We don't need to rehash that. But I think it's good. Good for them. I mean, you know, they have been saying that they've been wanting to put out more content for the game, and that they've been delayed in putting out the content that they've wanted to release because they've been just trying to catch up to server load.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, unfortunate for fans of who want to, you know, play more stuff, but in order for them to accommodate more players, you know, gotta keep the servers running.
Yeah. Yeah, it's. I just can't believe how successful it's been. Good for them. Good for Niantic.
What's
good for
these fans. What can't you believe about it?
I felt like this was a fad that went away. You know what I mean? And I especially then when I was leading up to Pokemon Go Fest, I was very much like, oh man, this is a cool idea that they're doing this, and I could see where it would jumpstart it. And then to have it go bad and have your core angry, mm-hmm. it was like, ooh, I don't know. Is now all the news going to be bad coming out
yeah,
of
but,
it?
Yeah, but I mean, who, when you talk about your core be mm-hmm. angry, you're talking just about the people that at FanFest.
Sure.
I mean, that's what, maybe there was 50,000 people there? Do we have an official count?
We did somewhere on, I think it was less than that.
And there's hundreds of millions of people playing this game around the globe. I haven't looked their list. Let me look up their latest list of downloads. And if you guys know, if you're watching on the Twitch chat, kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, of course, is something that you can use. But I mean, sure, I think people who were not at FanFest looked at the news and said, wow, that really sucks for them. But it was clearly not a problem with the game being broken. It was a problem with too many people flooding the cell towers in a very small area. You and I experience this when we're at conventions. Sure. If we're inside Comic-Con or E3, Pack. Trying to get a signal inside some of these convention centers where there's anywhere from 10 to 50,000 people in like a 1 mile, you know, radius, yep. it makes it really difficult to get a signal. How they didn't foresee that being a problem was really the root of their issue.
Sure.
Not the game itself being broken.
Sure. It's just weird to think about how many people played it at launch versus how many I thought were playing it now.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. And now granted, this is where you start getting in that revenue scale. We're not talking about concurrence, right? At mm-hmm. launch, I didn't pay any money for anything. So I'm just playing the game. Whereas if you're still so far into this, you're paying for lures, I'm guessing, candy and all that jazz, so you can go fight these legendaries.
So this headline from VentureBeat from June 30th, so about a month ago.
Sure.
Pokemon Go passes $1.2 billion in revenue and 752 million downloads.
Damn.
So 752 million downloads versus like the tens of thousands that sure. were in Chicago.
Well, even with those downloads though, I mean, how many people are still actively playing it? That was my point leading into
that's
it.
A fair point. I don't know. I don't think that they've released daily sure. active users.
When we were going into the festival and then even talking about the festival after the fact, what I was saying was I thought that for the majority of us, if you were to talk to people who played Pokemon Go at launch, they put it down and were like, oh, well, remember, it was broken. It did this. It crashed. It ate my battery. It was all bad news. And that was the lasting impression people had with it.
Right.
And so going into Pokemon Go, what I talked about was if that was a huge success, maybe somebody's like, oh, maybe I get back into it. Maybe I want to get back into it. Instead, it was all this. There's a lawsuit. They're booing. They're doing this. That doesn't motivate me to pull back out my phone and look at the app.
As of April 4th. Earlier this year, so who knows what the current
sure.
is, what the
sure.
new release is. 5 million daily active users.
Damn,
globally.
That's crazy. See, and that's what I'm talking about. It's just like, it's surprising to me, and I bet it's another one of our echo chamber things we always talk about. Just
yeah.
the fact that all of a sudden,
it's
no
nuts,
one's talking
yeah.
about it. I don't see, you know.
And that's just daily. Monthly active users are 65 million.
Yeah, yeah. More power to you. Go get them. I'm glad people enjoy the game so much, and I'm glad people are back into it if it's, you know, working the way they want it to. Number 4 on the Roper Report. Persona 5 is getting an anime in Japan in 2018. There's a trailer up on Daily Motion. Nothing really to say about it other than that news, but I wanted to put it on your radar. That's the weird. For the first few weeks of the show, you know, I guess we've been doing it longer than that now. God.
It's been over a month now.
I know. It's been a long time. For doing this show, like usually we get the news and there's lots to say about it, but hey, there's Persona 5 anime coming. You need to know about it, but I still haven't beaten the game, so I need to get my life together, which I talk about on the Gamescast that's up right now. On YouTube.com. It's kind of funny games. Number 5. Capcom is quote-unquote starting to prepare additional Switch games. Game Informer has this boiled down Wall Street Journal report. As the Wall Street Journal's Takahashi Mochizuki. I was close. Reports, the updated $40 port of Street Fighter 2, which was a decent one, sold over 450,000 copies during the first quarter of the financial year, according to the company. In its official earnings report, the company says the game, quote, made an excellent start and proved to be a smash hit. Because of the title's unexpected success, the company is, quote-unquote, starting to prepare additional Switch games. Whether this means it will begin porting more of its past games to the console, develop ports of its current titles, or create new games is unclear. Andrew, I bet they're ports. I bet it's more of this.
I mean, yeah, why not? Sure. People want to play games on their Switch. There's really not a lot to play right now.
Yeah.
There's a couple big tentpole games. And then once you finish those, there's maybe a few indies, but they are take up a couple hours of your time. And then you're like, okay, twiddling my thumbs if Switch yeah. is your primary console. So yeah, ports. That's fine. I mean, they're being successful on other consoles. So why not Switch?
Yeah. I want to jump to a question that came to kindoffunny.com/KFGD, where Mr. Bro Bot Brian wrote in and said, hello, Greg and Tim. Stop being lazy. I tell you who's on the show. She's on again tomorrow.
I'm all week, man, except for Wednesday.
Yeah, okay. What is the hesitation with AAA third-party developers creating content for the Nintendo Switch? As a busy 41-year-old husband with one toddler and one on the way, it's very difficult for someone like me to dedicate time in front of my PS4. That's why my Vita and Switch get so much more attention. With the average gamer aging 35 and up, many will start having families like myself. With Nintendo literally crushing it right now and Switch owners salivating for good content, parentheses, Ultra Street Fighter 2 success, it would make sense to put these great AAA experiences on a console that fits our lifestyles. So I asked these devs, where are you and what does Kinda Funny think? Where are they, Andrea? What do we think?
I think a lot of these bigger AAA third-party devs are waiting to see how it's going to go.
Sure.
And I don't blame them because you kind of burn them, right? So yeah. They want to make sure that Switch is popular, that people like the hardware, that software is running on the hardware before they're going to invest in, you know, making the software and porting games over. Granted, it's not a crazy amount of money that we're talking about versus porting versus creating new software, but it's still money and still like a line item in somebody's budget that they have to account for. So they're coming. I think that they've seen that, you know, it's going well. And
yeah.
That Nintendo's kind of on a roll and that they're doing some good things and that people are playing and there's a demand.
I think the biggest thing about it is, and we talked about this last week, I think towards the end too, was like, what are the profit margins on any of these games? And I think it's profit margins and then it's actual ability, where the Switch is less powerful than a PlayStation 4 and an Xbox One. So if you're working on that AAA kind of title, trying to bring it down to the Switch is going to involve a ton of work. And when you get down into a ton of work, granted, the Switch is selling well right now, but it's still not, there's not as many PS4s, and there's PS4 and Xbox One are so above and beyond in terms of sales. Why would you worry about a few million? That's why easy things like, hey, we're going to port something over. I know Tim last week talked about the Street Fighter thing of like, it was a pretty easy, you know, it's a simple game. It's not that great. It is just the same game you've played a million times, but they brought it over and it sold really well because people are desperate or wanting games real bad.
Yeah, I think Skyrim is a perfect example of this, right? Mm-hmm. So this is a port that's coming to yet another platform.
Yeah.
And people are excited about it. They had it in the wild for the first time at a Comic-Con and it looks like Skyrim just on a Switch. So we'll see how Skyrim does. I imagine that they'll sell probably at least hundreds of thousands of units.
Yeah.
I mean, when the remastered edition of Skyrim came to PS4 and Xbox One, it sold over a million units. So why wouldn't Bethesda bring it to Switch? And then, you know, maybe Bethesda will bring some of their other catalog over to Switch. And Ubisoft is already doing this as well. We're getting Rayman on Switch, which is coming in, I believe, in September.
Yeah.
So it's slowly but surely.
Yeah, that's
interesting. By the end of the year, I think we'll have a much better picture of where the other major third-party devs and publishers stand with, you know, really bringing some of their most popular franchises to Switch.
And that'll be the interesting thing, right? Do you take a franchise that's, I don't want to insult it or anything, but like smaller and simpler, like Rayman, and make a Switch version or do something like that? Or are you porting games that are from the PS3, 360 era that you know had an audience there but could run on this thing? And but I think it's when the numbers really get rolling and there's stock out there, that's when it gets really interesting. Of is EA and like Ubisoft, are they taking like, all right, UB Arts team, you go do this. Go make a Valiant Hearts-like game for the Switch. Go make something exclusive for the Switch because people will be there. Or is it going to be by the time Switchers are out in the wild and there's so many to get that the market's no longer how it is right now where people are so desperate to buy stuff?
You know, it's interesting. Nintendo really hasn't had a big library of third-party games developed exclusively for them. Mm. I mean, the last one that I can really think of that was major was probably Bayonetta.
Right.
Bayonetta 2, to be specific. But even their independent games aren't generally Nintendo exclusive.
Yeah,
they maybe arrive
on
Nintendo first, but then they come to other platforms later.
Mr. Shifty out on PlayStation 4 now.
So I would like to see them, you know, invest in some more exclusive development. I mean, clearly Xbox needs this as well. So they're kind of now vying for the same market. But I mean, I think Nintendo's focus has been and always will be their first party franchises.
Oh yeah,
that's why people 100%. Buy Nintendo 100%. Products. So
I think something Drinkbox used to always say about the Vita, right, I think applies to the Switch. And I think it's that Switch owners want to buy Switch games. And that's why I think Skyrim is going to sell really well. I think it's going to sell really, really well because I'm going to buy it again. I was like, yeah, sure. I want Skyrim just to screw around on planes or jump into and jump out of. And what Drinkbox used to always say about Vita is people would look at them and be like, are you crazy? Why are you making Vita exclusive games? Like this, you know, these are of course the guys who did Severed and the people who, you know, Guacamelee. And why are you putting these games out in Vita exclusively solely? And they were like, you don't understand. Like there's an audience here that actually buys the games. Like it's not a giant, it doesn't have the install base of the other ones, but if I'm putting it on a PlayStation 4, I'm just getting lost in the store.
Right.
Why would I want to do that? And it's going to be interesting to see if other indies cross over and do that as well, which you kind of seen with that Nindies thing where, yeah, Mr. Shifty's out first. That box game that I can't remember the name of
Death
is out
Square?
There first.
Is that the one you're thinking of?
No, Death Square. No, that is a box game, but Death Square actually came late to the Switch. But like, it's more recently, it's about a cardboard box. It doesn't matter. Anyways, they came to the Switch first and they had that exclusive window. And I think that's a really interesting, tantalizing thing of like, yeah, you can be one of the 14 PSN indies I'm going to read you tomorrow that are going to get buried in a whole bunch of different shit. But why not go to Nintendo and actually have a chance maybe like Snake Pass did? And Snake Pass came out. That got promoted really heavily by Nintendo. Kevin, was there a window on Snake Pass? I can't remember. Snake Pass. That came to Nintendo first, right? Or did it come to everything all at once?
I think it came to everything.
Everything all at once? Okay. I remember they got a lot of press for Nintendo, so who knows?
I think it was on Xbox One first. Snake Pass?
Yeah?
Yeah, because it was an ID at Xbox game. Huh. Let's find out. That someone go to kindoffunny.com/ you're wrong.
Let us know the release dates on all the platforms for Snake Pass. Sixth and final item on the Roper Report. Minecraft, quote unquote, Better Together beta begins today. Andrea, you added this one in.
I did.
Where'd it come from?
So, this came directly from Xbox. Ooh, they sent me this press release. The Better Together update, which will let you play with friends across devices, is getting a beta that starts today on Windows 10 PC and Android. There will also be a beta on Xbox One coming soon. This is the first time that you've been able to play... they say this is the first time ever that we've been able to do an update beta for our players on Windows 10 and Xbox One. The Better Together update is designed to unify the console, mobile, and Windows 10 PC versions of the game under one single Minecraft edition, which will include Infinite Worlds, the Community Marketplace, and Community Servers, which are coming to the beta later on. So this is, of course, what they announced on stage at E3 earlier this year. It's going to introduce cross-platform support, allowing console, Windows 10 PC, and mobile Minecrafters to play together for the first time. It brings together a collection of new features to players on the Bedrock engine platforms, including mobile and Windows 10, and players will notice the very long-awaited and much in-demand stained glass, fireworks, parrots and dads, customizable banners, armor stands, jukebox, music discs, recipe books, and ravines. And for multiplayer, they've added the ability for hosts to set player permissions and host options, along with other helpful tools. And last, but certainly not least, they've added the ability for players to share their creations in 3D by uploading 3D models from the game directly to remix3d.com.
Goddamn. Does this do anything for you? You like Minecraft?
I'm not a Minecraft player, but there are hundreds of millions of Minecraft players around the globe. So I'm sure this is exciting news for people out there listening that either have custom servers or, you know, do builds or have, you know, like a guild.
Just want to play with friends who play somewhere else. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's. I mean, hats off to them for doing that. That was a really cool announcement. Come on, Sony. Get on board and let them come to PlayStation. You know what I mean? But yeah, that's awesome. I like Minecraft. I've been enjoying it. I've reignited my love for it with Switch, which is interesting because I did the whole thing of like Vita was where I was playing it forever and had this world that I had built on, you know, the old IGN Let's Plays with Brian. And I'd jump in and tinker with it every so often. And then so when it came to Switch, got it, put it on there and never thought about it. And then like one of the last major trips, I jumped in. I was like, oh, let's see how different it looks. I'm sure it's just the Vita version. And like there's insane draw distances and all these crazy things and all these updates I've never seen before. I'm like, fuck, this is a brand new game from what I saw.
Yeah.
I didn't realize what a gimped version I was playing.
Well, after all this time, I mean, I think they have to continue to make those substantial improvements if they're not going to do Minecraft 2, right?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure it makes money hand over fist as it is. So why alienate those people and try to get them to get back on board with something when you can just keep updating, giving new reasons to play?
Exactly.
Yep. Andrea.
Yes, Greg.
If I wanted to go to mom and grop digital shops and stores around the country right now and know what was coming to them, where would I go?
You would go to the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday. Don't think I didn't hear you shit-talking Danny and I with Tim about this.
I said I wasn't going to call anybody. I wasn't going to play the game anymore. It's fine.
You
I didn't
said we
shit-talk
were,
anybody.
You said we were struggling with it.
You had been.
No, we haven't.
Everybody had been struggling because it's a lot of words to memorize. We have very busy lives.
I thought we'd been doing okay.
You had been doing okay. Still struggling. Still struggling.
Did that sound like I was struggling?
You read it. I saw your eyes on the page.
Tim's been reading it.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. Why are we being competitive? I love you. Why are we fighting?
We're not fighting. Everything's fine.
Out today, there are two games over on Steam. I added them late because I finally figured out I could just Google Steam new releases. Secret World Legends is out over there, and so is Mars 2030, which is one of them VR games, I think. Yeah, so enjoy jumping into there, seeing what they're all about. I got nothing to give you on any of those. Patapon's out tomorrow. We got new dates, however. Monster Hunter Stories will now be released on September 8th in North America and Europe. That's a 3DS game. Ark Survival Evolved has pushed back. It's been in early access forever. It's been in 2 years in early access. Now it's going to get a full release on August 29th. It originally said August 8th, but they've pushed it back. You've added here, Andrea.
Yes, the latest version of Yo-Kai Watch 2 called Psychic Spectres is finally coming to the West. It originally debuted in Japan in 2014.
Damn, son.
And now it's coming to 3DS on September 29th. Nintendo had previously said it was going to be out this fall, but now September 29th. And then Destiny 2 PC Beta has finally been dated for August 28th. So this is open to anyone who pre-orders the full game, which also gets you an exotic weapon. But if you guys don't pre-order, you can still play in the beta a day later on August 29th, and then it will conclude for everyone on August 31st. So the PS4 and Xbox One beta was extended. I wonder if they're going to extend the PC beta as well. I would have to imagine they will, because just a few days to test what could potentially be a massive influx of players.
What could go wrong?
Well, I mean, they're using Blizzard.net, so they're using the Blizzard launcher. So if they are paired up with that team is obviously pro at handling mass quantities of players coming in all at one time. So they should hopefully be okay.
What are your plans for the launch of Destiny?
PS4, that's where my clan is. That's where I've been playing. I definitely want to try it on PC, but yeah. My experience playing it at the reveal event where you and I both were testing it out was that, first off, it looks gorgeous in 4K. It's uncapped frame rate, so as fast as your machine can process it, it will, you know, kick off frames. But I am terrible with keyboard and mouse when it comes to first-person shooters. I mean, it's something you have to practice. You have to learn. It took me a really long time to get proficient with dual sticks on a controller. The idea that I have to go back and relearn that with mouse and keyboard, even though I know it's a superior way to play, it's just not my favorite way to play. So. Sure.
Yeah, I want it to be easy and jump
so
in.
I could maybe do PvE content on PC, but if I'm doing Crucible, it's going to be on PS4.
Andy and I's plan is we're playing on PlayStation 4.
Okay.
You know, we know you're playing on PlayStation 4 too.
Yes.
Launch day, September 6th. We want to do a giant stream. Ooh. We sit here and play. Do you want to play with us here?
That sounds excellent.
Kevin, is it possible to do three feeds of games?
I mean, a strike team is three players.
There's going to be one feed of
games. Oh, is that how we want to do it? Yeah. I thought Andy and I were playing here. I thought we were doing dual screen like we did with the Gears of War thing back in the day.
No, I mean, that wasn't the plan.
Okay.
I thought we were just going to do one stream.
Can anybody hear you right now, by the way? You're just leaning back talking. Sorry.
You're very far away from your microphone.
I'm not mad.
Yeah, I mean, I think for ease of like audio and stuff, I think just having one person playing.
But we're all here playing on our different screens. We're all saying, okay, that could work. That could work. You're welcome to invite it.
Or I could potentially stream that from home. Exactly. And we could just play together.
We have dual streams going that way. Okay. That mic made more sense because I looked at this thing and I put it on the calendar and it turns out on Wednesday the 6th, which is a weird release date, all three of Nick, Tim, and Kevin are out. So probably not having the most complicated stream on that day. Not probably a good idea. A safe bet there.
Is Cool Greg running the ship that day?
Oh yeah. We've been training him. He's getting good.
He's getting ready.
I want to jump into reader mail, Andrea.
Yes.
Remember, you want to be part of the show, kindoffunny.com/KFGD. I want to start with Austin Moore, who touches on something we've been talking about. Dear G&T, God fucking damn it, it's Andrea. She's here every day but Wednesday. With Tacoma coming out tomorrow and little to no coverage of it going around, does this show that exclusive third-party deals are bad for game developers? It almost seems like games like Tacoma are randomly tossed out, and it almost seems like nobody... seems like somebody is asleep at the marketing wheel here. Thoughts?
First off, no one's asleep at the marketing wheel for Tacoma. I've been getting many press releases and PR requests for gameplays, for interviews. So they're getting the word out about this game specifically. I think that third-party deals can be very great for the right developer with the right platform, with the right terms. You don't want to take a developer who's maybe not as well-known as some others and give them a really long period of exclusivity, because that could hurt their discoverability and their reach later on in the life cycle of the game. But it could also be really beneficial to them up front. Look at Psyonix and Rocket League, for example. Yeah. Like, that exclusivity with PlayStation was excellent for them up front. And now they're huge. Yeah. And that was an example of a third-party deal done right. And I think that these deals are going to continue to be really important, as we've been discussing, for all of the platform holders. And they're not going to go away. I don't know why people aren't hearing more about Tacoma. I think that's more about this type of game 100%. And how the concept of the game is really difficult to explain. Kind of like Gone Home, right. Their previous game, Fulbright's previous game, was also really difficult to explain.
That's the whole thing about it, where I think that we're taking the success of Gone Home and trying to apply it to Tacoma, and the fact that leading up to the release of Gone Home, there was no buzz about Gone Home.
No, not at all.
And that's the thing I think is going to happen again with Tacoma, where Tacoma's going to hit. And if they do what Fulbright does so well, everyone's going to be like, holy shit, this game isn't what you think it is. You played this, this happens, that story, blah, blah, blah. I think that's when it picks up steam. Because we've had this, I've brought this topic up before of like, oh yeah, Tacoma's coming up and I'm excited about it. But I think it did not hurt them, but the fact that it got announced so long ago and then it's been like a steady thing, but it's almost the same demo you see every time because they don't want to show you too deep into the game, has tempered expectations. And it's like, how many times they, like you're saying, Steve Gaynor was coming through for interviews and all this stuff, and tried to make it work to get him on Game Over Greggy's show. I didn't want him on Gamescast because I didn't want to talk about Tacoma, because I know we can't say anything more than what we've already said about Tacoma.
Well, because it's such a narrative based game, you exactly. can't really talk about it without giving away the experience of discovering that story for yourself.
Yeah.
So it's a tough game to do previews of, because you don't really want to spoil it for people that are going to play it. You just kind of have to take a leap of faith and try it out.
And it was the same thing with Edith Finch, right? Even right. Of coming up, and I mean no longer being exclusive, obviously, but coming up of like, not a lot of buzz leading up to it of like, oh, it's Giant Sparrow's game again. And I was like, at PAX, I'm like, I don't even want to fucking see it. I don't want to play it. I know I'm in. I want to play it when I get the full game and go through
right.
it. It's similar to me with like Telltale games. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, do you want to come by and do like the first hour, or first chapter or first hour? I'm like, no, fuck no. I'll play it when it comes out. I don't want to get there and ruin what it's going to be.
Right.
And I think, so yeah, it's a different, this isn't indicative of third-party deals. I don't think Microsoft was ever going to run ads for this during like NBA Finals or something. That's not what this game is. That's not how you promote it.
Right.
You want to see a third-party deal that's done right, right? Look at like Spider-Man and PlayStation, right? Like Insomniac isn't a first party, you know what I mean? They've worked very closely with PlayStation for years and years, but that game is a juggernaut already, and everybody's so excited for it. And like, that's how you can do a game of that caliber, of that size. Same thing. Now the other side of that equation is like Insomniac with Xbox for Sunset Overdrive, mm-hmm. where Xbox tried and people who played in Sunset Overdrive liked Sunset Overdrive. But again, hard game to explain.
It was tough because it was also a Xbox One launch title.
Yep.
And so you would think that
Yes. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
You would think it would have done better than it did. And I think that it just, the art style in that game was a little off the wall, and people didn't really know what it was about, and there really wasn't like a central character
And it was another one where every demo you saw, I think, looked the same.
Right.
Where it was like, since I don't know the world and I don't know the characters, it was like everything I'm seeing, just like, am I just skate around and fight stuff? Like, what's going on?
Yeah. Like, so I think cool? It really is dependent on what the game is.
100%. Javier Bonet Riaz, or now he's calling himself JBR, says, hey Greg and Tim, god fucking damn it. This past weekend from July 28th to the 31st was the Lawbreakers beta on PC and PS4. I've been playing it on PlayStation 4, and I gotta say it's a lot of fun. Definitely tricky and way more intense than other shooters once you start, but I've really been enjoying the game. I think Boss Key has a great game on their hands. My question is, did you guys try out the beta, and if so, what were your thoughts? What's your experience with Lawbreakers?
I have not played it since it's been in beta. I played it when it was in alpha. So they have changed quite a few things since then. I saw that this was in open beta, and I was going to jump into it, but I got sucked into a Fortnite wormhole. And I'm really looking forward to testing this out once it launches, which is, I believe, next week.
Yeah, August 8th, I want to say. Yeah. I mean, I went down and did that video. It was a Lawbreakers video about like them coming to PlayStation 4, and got to play it there and play the PlayStation 4 version. And I was like, I was honestly like, oh, this is actually fun. Like, I'm not the biggest shooter guy. I'm definitely not a multiplayer shooter guy with the exception of Titanfall. So to jump in and actually have fun and feel like, oh, okay, I'm getting this character. I'm learning how to do this. I'm stoked. I didn't play the beta, but it was because I'd already played that and it was another one of those. I'm sold. Just give me the, you know, let me play it when it comes out and I'll play it and I'll enjoy what I played. But yeah, I think it's interesting. I think it looks cool. What's going to be the impact, how big of a fan base it gets, how big of a community gets, that's going to be interesting for me. Because it is, I really do like Cliff's and Bosky's statement of just like, it's multiplayer only. We're only charging $40. This is what we think it should be.
They're
like,
charging $29.99, actually.
Oh, my apologies. $30, right? They're very much of like, we want to make a game that is AAA, and we feel like we're a AAA studio, but we're not. You know what I mean? Like, this is something that's different. This is it. And that's a good message to have, and I think it's going to be appealing.
Yeah, absolutely. And the window that they've selected is excellent. They're getting out in front of Battlefront, mm-hmm, out in front of Call of Duty, and that's
out in front
really,
of Destiny. Like, this is a good time to launch.
Smart
choice. Well, next week is a quieter week in terms of game releases. The 15th, I know things start really ramping up again, but here is this shooter. It is cheap. We want you to get in and have fun and get attached to it. All right, go get them. Corey wrote in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD, just like you can, and says, how do you feel about the touchpad on the PlayStation 4 controller? Currently, I'm playing Doom, and being able to pinch and zoom or swipe on the map feels so right. I usually don't see games using the touchpad. Hell, my wife didn't even know that you can click on the left or right side. It usually brings up different things, menu or map. Do you find that developers are using it effectively, and what is your favorite implementation of the touchpad?
I feel like not enough developers are using it effectively.
100%.
Some developers are doing cool stuff with it. Most developers just use it as an extra button and they're not really utilizing it.
Not even extra button. It's literally the start. It's start and select. You know what I mean? Like, it used to be. It's just like, okay, we've replaced these buttons with this thing. And like, now it's just two sides of the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the same thing of like, whenever you talk about innovation, whether it's, we're talking about like the Wiimote, the Wii gamepad, the PlayStation Move, when you start deviating, what I always talk about, especially when we're talking about like graphics and this and like, oh, well, the Xbox One, well, your Xbox One X is still going to have to deal with the fact that it's games are going to be made for PlayStation 4, so they're up. Blah, blah, blah. This is exactly the point of like, when you get a third-party game and it's coming out on Xbox One already, you're just like, well, just replicate what the hamburger button does on the right side of the touchpad. You know what I mean? Like, why would I go through and give it something special? Like, games like Thief did a whole bunch of different things with like light bars and this, like where it was like, oh, cool, but it was like, it didn't sell more copies. It didn't make it, you have to play it on PlayStation.
Right.
I agree. Anything where I can use the map or I can pinch and zoom with it or I drag my finger on, it's cool implementation. It's cool, but it's so few and far between that I was like, well, you didn't need to do this. Like, there was no real reason for this. And I think looking back at like, I think when there was a little more talk of or thought of like, well, it'll be, you know, we have to be ready for VR. So like, have the light bar, have that, have the sensors. It's just, it's a similar thing, not as egregious, I feel, as like when the PlayStation Vita came out and has a back touch and a front touch. And it was like, we just wanted to play games. We don't need bubbles.
The back touch on the Vita was always so difficult to use.
God, I was, what was I doing the other day? I was trying to remote play something, but even it was like remote play menus or something. And I was going through and I'm like, I was in a game. I'm like, why can't I'm tapping all over the fucking back touch. I can't get anything to work. I'm like, God, this thing sucks. Why'd they do this? Could have had a shot.
Somebody on Reddit says that this is super obvious shill. I love that name. It makes the PS4 controller a good PC controller. If you need to do something with the mouse while you're outside of the game, you can quickly scroll around with the touchpad. The community implementation I can speak today of the drivers for the PS4 controller also lets you bind clicks so you can replicate the functionality of a mouse in addition to a keyboard. That's kind of a nice feature.
I'm glad we're taking care of the PC dorks. All right? It's not meant for you. Stay away.
I use my DS4 on PC for games that have it.
Yeah, well, it should be every game. Playing this Battlefield or whatever, Battlegrounds. I got to hit C. I'm putting WASDs over here.
You can plug your Xbox One controller in and use controller support.
Can you really?
Have you tried it?
No, I thought I'd just get my ass kicked.
I mean, no one's saying you're not going to get your ass kicked.
Okay. Can't use my PlayStation 4 controller for that.
You can try both.
Okay.
Most of the time they're interchangeable.
PC gaming is scary. I just don't want to do it, Andrea. I just want to get in there. That's where the child predators live. I don't want to get in there. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's true. Look at any one of the datelines with Chris Hansen. Where are they coming from? The internet. What's the internet connected to? The PC. They're using AIMs, the chat clients. I'm not falling for it. I'm not showing my dick to anybody again. Jack Scollins wrote in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD with the final question. He says, Greg fucking Miller, With male/female co-host. It's a female, that's Andrew. With the failure of Mass Effect Andromeda and the change in leadership at BioWare, do you see them ever doing a Mass Effect collection? It would be the first time Mass Effect 1 has ever been on PlayStation and can bring new players to the franchise. Thanks. And as always, keep fucking that chicken. We ever going to see a next-gen collection of Mass Effect?
I would love that.
Yeah.
I would go back and play all of those games in a heartbeat if they brought a collection to the current generation. But I mean, you can play, I think you can play all backwards three of those in backwards compatibility on Xbox One. So PlayStation, I mean, because the original Mass Effect never released on PlayStation.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it would come. It would be great, but they're working on other stuff.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's just one of those things of exactly. I think they're looking forward now. They know they have to worry about reaching for the name. I want to say
Anthem.
Anthem. I want to say Revelry. Close enough.
They're not the same thing at all.
Well, you have Revelry and you have Anthem. They're both like things you would play on a trumpet. So that's where I was at. All right, and they're both the same. Okay, they got to focus on that. And I do think bringing it up brings up Andromeda, where you're like, oh well, that was a. And I think now you get your wheels moving. And at this point, why not wait and do it on PlayStation 5, Xbox 2, whatever the hell the next real quote unquote generation is going to be, not the half steps.
Yeah,
I feel like you can make even more money there if you were launching with that. And it was this. Did Mass Effect 1 never really come to PlayStation in any way, shape, or form? I remember it didn't for the longest time because I remember obviously Mass Effect 2 comes. You had to use the backup. You had to use the comic thing, which I thought was cool because of course Mass Effect 1.
I mean, it was cool,
weakest of the trilogy.
It wasn't. It's not a substitute for playing the game. Yeah, yes, it did eventually come to PlayStation 3.
I didn't. Okay. So just PlayStation 4 doesn't come to.
Correct.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like they had a good window there leading up to Andromeda. I think that would have been the time to do it a year out or something. Be like, hey, yeah, and here's the Mass Effect trilogy. And everybody goes, woo!
Oh, it's because you had to buy it in the trilogy.
On
PlayStation, yeah.
Yeah. All right, time to squad up. This is where one of you writes into kindoffunny.com/KFGD. Where do you do there? You go there, you ask these questions. You put in your name for people you want to hang out with. And then I read them here. You give us your name, what platform you're playing on, all that jazz, and why you need friends. I read it here on the show. Then the other best friends on your platform hit you up and go play games with you and have a good time. This one comes from Marcus, and I wouldn't try to pronounce your last name, but you say in parentheses, please try to pronounce it, Greg. Marcus Hikikila.
Oh my gosh.
Marcus writes in he needs friends on PlayStation 4. His PSN username is Knight, N-I-G-H-T, dash Mare, M-A-R-E, and then a W. Nightmare W, but with a hyphen. He says he needs friends because I'm currently going through a heartbreaking divorce, and I finally bought a PS4 to keep myself occupied. Sadly, I don't have any real-life friends who play games, to the point that I'm starting to feel so isolated as that sickly raccoon trapped in the box by Grandma Miller. So I'd love to... this thing. That raccoon had rabies, probably. We did not want to touch it. So I'd love to connect with the... Oh, you can awe him, though. Yeah,
no, that's what I'm saying. It's sad that he feels that way.
I thought you were sad about
way.
The raccoon.
No, whatever, raccoon.
Grandma Miller did God's work that day. Sorry about you, Marcus, though, in the divorce. So I'd love to connect with the best friend community over some fun multiplayer. I'm currently playing Mortal Kombat X, Alien Nation, Helldivers, and Rocket League. I realize these aren't exactly brand new games, but I'm still catching up with all the games I missed out on before I could afford a PS4, and I really can't afford that many newly released titles either. So if anyone's still into those games or just wants to add me as a friend, I'd be more than happy to connect with the best community on the interwebs. Cheers from Finland, where we ride polar bears to work and live in igloos. Thank you for all the entertainment. Marcus.
He just blew Kevin's mind.
It happens a lot around here. I think he's joking, Kev. Don't go moving to Finland. All right?
I don't know, guys.
All right, we'll think about it. Everybody hit up Marcus. Be best friends with him. Knight-Mare W. Enjoy. Andrew?
Yes, Greg?
What did we get wrong today?
Well, I've just pulled up the page. And it says... Oh, yes, I did mess that up. Andrea said the four classes in Fortnite were Soldier, Ninja, Assassin, and Constructor. There is no Assassin class. The fourth is Outlander. And the irony of that is that's class that I'm playing is the Outlander class because it's like the class that gets like loot bonuses. You can see loot through walls and stuff.
Ooh.
You can run real fast. And you deploy this like mechanical bear that has double guns and it rotates around.
Yes.
It's like a giant bear bot and it says, I am a bear, you are not a bear, and it just shoots everybody.
Okay, that's cool. I like that.
It's excellent. So thank you for that correction. I have to say this, I believe that Monster Hunter on 3DS was both exclusive and rather big as well. I don't know what that means.
We were talking about that. We couldn't think of the last Nintendo. You said Bayonetta 2 was the last exclusive of relevance.
Yeah, but the new Monster Hunter. Are you talking about Monster Hunter 3?
Which I see what you're talking about. Now I'm caught up. The Monster Hunter that came to the Wii with the controller.
Which Monster Hunter are we referring to here?
Okay.
I don't know. If you could, I don't know if you're going to be able to write in again, but yeah, if you could clarify.
Give context, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Snake Pass release dates as per Wikipedia. The game was released for Microsoft Windows, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One North America on March 28th, 2017, and in Europe and Australia the following day. So I guess it did not come to Xbox first. I thought for some reason it did. Maybe because they promoted it? I don't know. That's weird.
No, and the Switch did a lot. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know either.
Hmm, okay.
I mean, I didn't say it, so I don't have to know.
Yeah. All right. Sunset Overdrive came out on October 28th, 2014. Xbox One came out on November 22nd, 2013. That doesn't sound right.
That doesn't sound right at all. It came out before the Xbox was in stores?
No, no, after. A year after, he's saying. It came out a year after. I'm pretty sure they had launch bundles.
I think it...
Will you look it up?
Yeah,
look
I'm
it
on up. It. I remember it not being a launch title.
Okay. I could have swore they did bundles, launch bundles. But... I could be wrong.
October 28th, 2014 was Sunset Overdrive.
Okay. Well, yeah, because the console's launched in 2013.
Wow.
Right?
Wow. Yeah, no,
I'm
you're
not
right.
crazy. I'm,
yeah.
So
Xbox
clearly,
One released on November 22nd.
So clearly, I got it wrong. Thank you for the correction. All right, Greg and Andrea, during today's show, you said that. Okay, we already talked about that. Yes, we already talked about that. These are all about Sunset Overdrive.
Sure.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you for correcting me. It was a while ago, okay? A lot of stuff has happened since then.
No one's judging you.
Oh, no, they're judging me.
Well, it's the internet. They're judging all of us at all times.
So this is what we were talking about at the end here. So maybe they put this in before we clarified. Mass Effect was released on PS3 as part of the Mass Effect trilogy, both in print and digitally. So after further looking, it looks like if you wanted it on disc, you could only get it as part of the trilogy, but you were able to buy it as a standalone for digital only. So you couldn't get like a Mass Effect retail disc for PlayStation, only for Xbox. Okay. And that's it.
Okay. Now, I usually give you the rigmarole here and end the show. We have one more question that we're going to put in here, but it spoils The Last of Us. So if you don't want any Last of Us spoilers or any discussion about the ending of The Last of Us, this is your chance to leave. Remember, it's Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday, all the nerdy news you need to know about video games. Go to all the different things. Subscribe, like, share, thumbs up, Patreon, Kinda Funny Live 3's up. Okay? All right. So the final question, this is the special segment called Let's Spoil The Last of Us. Kevin Brown writes into kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, "Hi guys. So I had a conversation lately with a friend who was convinced that Joel was the bad guy by the end of The Last of Us. He considered him to be one of the villains of the game. Now, I'm not condoning his action, but that thought didn't even cross my mind until after I finished the game. I've played through it 4 times since launch, and I still don't consider Joel's actions evil. Would I have done anything different given the situation? I can't say for sure that I would have. Does that make me a bad guy, or are some of his actions justified? What do you guys think of the character of Joel after finishing the game? Thanks for the great work. Love the new content. Much love from Ireland, Kevin." When you finished Last of Us, did you think Joel was a bad guy?
No.
Wow. I 100% did.
Yeah?
It's one of my... there's so many... I'm sure there's so few moments that I have like video game memory burn. And it was, I finished that game and I immediately texted Neil and I texted him like, "I was the bad guy. Joel's the bad guy." And he's like, no, I mean, it's your interpretation. But he was trying to get in this like heady space. So I'm like, no, he just fucked over the human race. He's a bad guy.
No, but you don't know that.
No,
because we don't know if there's another person out there who has what she had. Right. And I think that, if you look at how his actions played out throughout the entire game, a bad guy is evil in the core. Mm-hmm. They're evil all the way to like the center of their being. They don't think about other people. They only think about themselves or the power or whatever they stand to gain. And that's not who he is as a character. Mm. He's got good inside of him, and evil people don't have good inside
them. But remember,
them.
The villain always thinks he's the hero of his story. So when he's popping off kneecaps and putting pens in people's mouths and having, like, his actions are selfish, right? His actions are
selfish.
Selfless
is not evil, though.
Sure. Well, now, it's also important, I think, to point out the fact that this is like the Walking Dead universe, right? Where morality, it's everybody's in a gray area here. Right. You're killing people left and right. I don't know if our rules, you know, apply or whatever. But totally, by the end, like, because for me, I always talk about it. Like, I'm playing through that final level, shooting all the guys, and you get into the room with the doctors and her and Ellie, and it popped up. Like, he draws the gun on the doctor, and I was like, oh, okay. And I waited for the choice to pop up, and it didn't. And I got the doctor stabbed and killed me. And I was like, I have to kill the doctor? Like, I started up and I was like, holy shit, I did not see that coming. I thought it was Tony to do the usual video game cop out of like, no, choose your own ending. And I was like, no, Neil.
It would have been better if they could have left like the option to like let the doctor live, right? But if you think about it, he doesn't know if what the doctor's saying is true. He doesn't know if the doctors are lying to him. He knows that he cares for Ellie and they've created this bond in this relationship, and he doesn't want anything to happen to her, because what if the doctors are wrong? What if they open her up and like they kill her, and then like the shit's blown up, and now he's let them kill this person that he's created this bond with,
daughter number two.
I don't think he's bad at all. Did he make some questionable choices? Absolutely.
I'm getting the money, you know, money quarterback the entire situation, of course. I don't think it would have been better if they had the choice. I just was prepared for a choice because video games have taught me that, to go the rest of the way and finish it and be like, man, I would not have done any of that, but be like, I respect the story. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that Naughty Dog told the story they wanted to tell. I was all for that. It's 100% what you're saying of Greg being the guy playing the game, having, you know, trying to get all the trophies, so I'm collecting all the things and reading it, where I'm like convinced that, like, I'm convinced based on the things I've found that, yeah, they can do this. They're going to be able to do this. But I totally get the other side of it, because that was Colin and I's argument we used to always have of like, when he got to the end of like, well, you don't know if it would have worked. And I'm like, no, it would have, because of all the paperwork. And then we had Neil on a podcast beyond, and we're like, would it have worked? He's like, oh, yeah. And we're like, ah, see? And so it's like, you don't know that. Joel doesn't know that. I get that. I get Joel doesn't know that there's a god with long hair and a little beard who's telling him everything.
But here's the thing. In the world of medicine, and like, obviously it's different, mm-hmm, if you talk, mm-hmm, to the creator of the story and they say definitively,
sure,
it would have worked. In the world of medicine, like in real life, it's so unpredictable. The doctors don't know if things will work, even, yep, if historically procedures or certain types of diseases have been eradicated.
Like, right?
There's always like the X factor in when it comes to the human body and the way that it reacts to, yep, to disease. And so I think it's a little unfair for Neil to be like, oh yeah, it would have worked. You're the asshole.
I think he means that,
like, if he's
it would have worked in terms of you would have been able, that it's possible to get the cure. She did have this, they had the procedure that, I still think there is the random number generator role here, right? Of like, oh, maybe something goes wrong. They nick an artery, blah, blah, blah.
It's not fair for him to say it's up to interpretation dictated what the story is and then come out to be like, well, actually, this is what it would have happened.
Yeah.
But that's bullshit, Neil. Come on. You can't have it both ways.
But I mean, the other thing gets interesting too of like, and this is another conversation argument we had all the time of just like, let's say it does work. You go through and everything goes fine. How do you disseminate this cure? How do you get it around? You know, I mean, it's not like in like, do you have the capability?
The CDC doesn't exist anymore.
Nobody, yeah, exactly. People hate the fireflies. You don't even know what's going on. Like, how do you get people to trust you and do all this stuff, and you got monsters everywhere? Joel's a bad guy.
You don't. He's not a bad guy.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily. Thank you so much for watching and or listening. Remember, it's up each and every weekday on a number of different platforms, Twitch, YouTube, iTunes, all that jazz. If you could go review it, share it, subscribe to it, that'd be grand. Kinda Funny Live 3 is up for everybody for free. Go to youtube.com/kindafunny. You can watch it right now. Enjoy that. Tomorrow, there'll be a Mario plus Rabbids Let's Play up on youtube.com/kindafunnygames as well. Andrea, what do people need to keep an eye out for you this week for What's Good Games and everything else?
Well, this week is, so today is specifically, and for Kinda Funny patrons as well, today is the last day to get in if you want to get the stuff for August, because they close it off and they charge people starting on the 1st, at least for us, the way we have our Patreon set up. So if you guys want to support what we're doing for the next month and get our exclusive stuff, it's patreon.com/whatsgoodgames. We have a stream on Thursday. We had a special interview with Ian Dallas, the creative director at Giant Sparrow, about the Xbox One launch of What Remains of Edith Finch. There are story spoilers in that interview, which we warn about in the title. So if you guys want to hear that, you can download that on podcast services, or you can also go to our YouTube page and check that out.
Great. Andrew, thanks for coming by.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'll see you tomorrow. She's here tomorrow. Don't address your questions to Tim or Danny. Danny's just gone again.
Galvin. I am here tomorrow.
Until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.